Succession number 13149, rule 3.
Mr. Betts, it's reel 3.
Yeah, so anyway, a friend of mine did very well out of that because he's got the gift of the gab. He's a chap that I stayed with in Melbourne. He stayed in Australia. And he said the song, he said, throw an order to me. He said, can I take something? So he said, yeah. So anyway, finished up with a brand new suit, a dressing gown, nothing, an overcoat, collar and tie, and a pair of shoes. And he did very well. Because, as I said, all the soldiers, I don't blame the soldiers. I still lay the blame on, I keep repeating myself, I lay the blame on the officers. And then afterwards the sergeant said, right, he said, we'll have you up here again tomorrow morning, you know, to scrub the deck. I mean, I'd never done that with this, sand soap, whatever. I was really blistered. Anyway, the following morning when he came down, you, I wasn't there. I hid in the toilet, I never did that again. Then...
When their luggage was being thrown overboard, were the Jews there complaining about it?
Well, they had complained about it, but I don't think they knew anything about it being thrown overboard. I don't think they knew. They complained. They kept on asking if they could have their belongings. But they stuck away somewhere.
Why was the luggage thrown overboard? Out of badness, or I
don't know. I can't see one good reason, because if anything, I mean, right, we've been torpedoed once. They've tried to torpedo us again. There you are. I mean, if there's a U-boat in the area. He's got a lovely thing to follow. Suitcases for miles, you can say. Because there were so many suitcases, it was amazing. I don't know why they threw it overboard, because, I mean, I can't understand. It must have been sheer vindictiveness. And again, who else could give the orders but the officers? So that's why I keep coming back there. I mean, the commander of the ship, he finished up. He wouldn't even talk to the commander, because the colonel who was in charge, Colonel Scott.
How did you know that?
Well, we got to know that afterwards. In fact, now also to get air for 400 of us. Oh no, more than 1,000. When I told the Jews also had to use it. There was a space not as wide as this room. Half as wide as this room, come up for air, and it will go to about my fence there. Now, what used to happen, we used to have to ration to come up for 20 minutes for air. The air was so small. And in fact, it was the commander of the ship, we got to know this later, it was the commander of the ship that said, I'm ordering you that this has got to be made bigger, and it was enlarged.
What was enlarged?
The fresh air area to come up, and then also we had what they called our leisurely walk, but in fact they used to make us run round the deck barefooted. Now at each end there's a soldier with a machine gun. And you could see the finger on the trigger. Now, that was intimidating. And now, when we were in Greenock, going back, I was given an army uniform with a big red cross on the back.
What did that mean?
Well, the prison house, but that was to make sure that I didn't get out as a soldier. I mean, it's understandable. So, eventually, although I had this with me, I wouldn't take my suit off. But there's Nikua and Tolaini. They said to me one day, they said, for Christ's sake, Lou, take that stinking thing, your stinking blooming place out. So I hated to do it, but I took it off and I put this army uniform on. So we're going round the decks. All of a sudden, stop. So I stopped. He said, how dare you wear British... This was an officer. I don't know, he was a captain. He said, how dare you wear the uniform of the British Army? I said, I don't want the bloody thing. So I went, bang. He said, get down there.
He hit you with his hand.
It was a slap. He said, get down there. And I went there. Now, this is where the Jews' stuff was. Even there, there were still, although they'd been throwing them out, there were still piles of suitcases. There was clothes strewn everywhere. Anyway, the soldier, I took the uniform off, and the soldier gave me a shirt, a jacket, and a pair of trousers. The trousers were that much too long. Well,
much too big.
12 inches too long for me. The jacket fitted, and the shirt fitted. So when I got back to, we got back to our quarters, there's a chap there called Barbuti. Now, what we missed, other than the food, was a cigarette. I mean, I don't smoke anymore, but I used to. So I get there and there's this Barbuti. So he said, hello, Lou. He said, that's a nice jacket you got. And he started to feel, felt the lapel. And so I said, he said, want to sell it? I said, yeah. Now, you could buy on the black market. Now, see, what we could do with the soul. Now, for instance, a tuppenny bar of chocolate cost you sixpence. So if you had money, you could buy, and you could buy cigarettes. So I said, give me 5 shillings, I said, and you can have it. No, he said, I haven't got 5 shillings. Strange enough, in spite of all the... Now, there's another... In spite of all the searches and people went down, people still had money. I mean, human nature's fantastic, what it does, what it overcomes and how it hides things. I mean, people have hid their rings up their backsides. And that's no joke. Anyway, so he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'll give you 40 cigarettes. I said, yeah, and a shilling. I said, I want a shilling. So I've got 40 cigarettes and a shilling. Now, with the shilling, I bought 2 bars of chocolate because there was Peter Biscuits, the one who was... And there was Andy and I smoked, Peter didn't. So I went up the wire where the kitchen, where they used to serve the food from, gave the bloke 2 bars of chocolates, put them in his trousers. Somebody had cut them for me. But the pockets were tight. Put them in there. And I had the cigarettes there as well. Because you didn't leave anything behind. Because, hey, that's it. You people steal. I mean, even law-abiding in those circumstances, survival of the fittest. So we went for our usual so-called stroll. Every time we went out, you used to find the soldiers had been there, they'd ransacked your belongings. So when we got there, soldiers there, they're still searching.
Just stealing stuff?
Stealing. I get there and he said, right, starts to search me. I said, that's it, I'm gone. And he's getting, putting his hand, now the pocket was tight, putting the hand, and he can't get his hand in. So at that time there was a quite big scream from down below. They were trying to get a gold ring off the German's finger. He said, I can't get it off. He said, you'd have to cut my finger off. You know, I mean, mine, for instance, would be if I had to get it off. Anyway, so they say, a bayonet was stuck in his backside, and he let out a scream. This soldier was searching me. Let go. He turned round, and as he turned round, I was away like the wind. And then I was stopped again. He says, I said, I've just been searched. He said, who searched you? I said, over there. I said, he searched. I said, didn't you just search me? Well, I suppose he remembered. He said, yes. I got away with it. The bars of chocolate I gave to Peter because he didn't smoke. And Andy and I shared the 40 cigarettes because Andy and I were very, 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 very close.
So the soldiers were just taking what they wanted?
Took what they wanted. But the biggest con of the lot was, of course, where we complained to the officers. I can't remember his name, but it's on record with some of those. He came there and he said, I've had complaints saying that your belongings have been taken. Now to stop that any further, I'll pass a bag around, and you put all your belongings in there with your name attached. He said, when we reach port, he said, I give you my word, as an officer and a gentleman, that you will get them back.
Who said this?
This is the officer, one of the officers who did it. It's down on record, and I can't remember his name, but it's there. And they were never seen again.
Did you believe him?
Well, I didn't give him anything because I didn't have anything. Oh, quite a few did believe him. Some didn't. But Tolini did, and so did Victor Corr, and no, Victor Lini, Nick Corr, they believed him. They gave him stuff. I had nothing to give. I don't know whether I would have given any, but I didn't have anything. They'd taken mine. And another thing, we used to watch them. I mean, our food was very meagre. I mean, we all lost a lot of weight. But the thing is, we used to see them tip the food overboard. There was the sort of galley there. There was a great sort of an open thing they used to. But for a while, I got on a wheeze to get double rations with the aid of Andy. Now I, as the youngest of the table, two youngest. We had a table. I think it was 24. There were 24, and then we'd elected our leader and the table. We had the head of the table and everything. So there, the table's like, you two youngsters, you go up and get the food. Well, I went, and while I was there, I was washing. I said, so although Andy wasn't at my table, I knew I could trust him. So I said, Andy, I said, I think I've found a way to get double rations. He said, how? So I told him, he said, if you get caught. I said, don't worry. I said, I'll take the chance, not you. So he said, what do you want to do? I said, look, you go in there. Now, he was a chap. He used to throw his arms around when he spoke, and he'd attract attention. I said, you go in there. I said, you start talking to him. Yeah, right. So give your table number. Now, once you say, this is the soldier there. So our table was 89. So while he's marking the 89, Andy's gone through, and he's got his, not all that tall. So I slipped under there. Once you were in there, they didn't ask anymore. There was plenty of food on board. So I finished up. I used to carry, although it should have been two of us, one had to carry, and twice a week we did that until I got caught.
What happened when you got caught?
Well, I was very lucky when I got caught because, what happened there, they asked for volunteers to go and help in the kitchen. the Italian volunteers. Well, we had a discussion about it, and we decided that we weren't going to help them. That was a decision.
Because of your treatment?
Because of the treatment. We weren't going to help. However, there's always the renegades. So there were four Italians who went there. And one of them was called a chap called Didoni. So he's as short as I am. So I went then, I tried to say, and he said, "What are you doing, Biscuits?" So he said, "You can't do that." Because I said, "I'd table ache." He said, "Andy's got table ache, you know, not you." I said, "See, Dorney," I said, "if you open your mouth," I said, "when I get out of it," because they'd have caught me, I'd have been slung in the brick. I said, "when I get out," I says, "I'll kill you." And I said, "if I don't get out," I says, "my mates will kill you." And believe me, I wasn't joking. And I looked a horrible sight, because I hadn't shaved for where I had a growth of beard and unkempt. I had no haircut or anything. Not only that, it was menace in my voice, because I meant every word of it. Of course, the thing is, that was it. That put the kibosh. But we ate well for a couple of weeks.
Why do you think the treatment was so bad?
I don't know. I can never work it out. And the thing is that it doesn't matter what society you're in. You've got a bad lot. I mean, you saw in Germany. You saw what came up. Now, nobody's going to tell me that all the German people were like that. And I say this, you go in any country, you'll find a mass of people who are like that, irrespective of their race or creed or anything. We had them in Italy. And nobody, I mean, I've known the Italians all my life. In the main, they're caring people, and the English and the French. You're not going to. There are people still today. As soon as they see something right, they're going to have a go. They're going to have a go at a minority. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, just I'm sure there were a lot who were ashamed of it.
What about the crew of the ship?
No, we had no contact with the crew at all. I think the crew were disgusted. They say again, of course, we don't know. They say that the commander of the ship wouldn't eat at the same table as the colonel, and there was another incident there. This is before I found this. There were three of us there. There was Andy, there was Peter, and myself. We're sitting on the floor, and Peter said, "Oh, I'm hungry." And I said, "Oh, so am I. Oh, for a bit of bread." And Andy said, "I know where there's a piece of bread." So I said, "Where?" He says, "San Pietro." He said, he's got a crust underneath his pillow. Oh, I said, "Can't pinch his bread." So he said, "Why not?" He said, "He's head of the table. When he gets the loaf of bread, he cuts the first crust and hides it. And then he gets up about 3 a.m. and eats it." So I said, "Then that's what I said. Well, I said, go and get it." He said, "No." He said, "I'm not going to eat it." He said, "If I get it," he knows I know, and he'll blame me. And he said, "So I said, tell me where it is." I said, "I'll get it." So I went there. Gingerly put out. We sat down, we divided this in three as fairly as we could. Anyway, 3 o'clock in the morning, thereabouts, I was farming a great big war. "Who saved my bread?" And there was pandemonium. There was pandemonium, there was. So anyway, he got a hold of that. He said, "You, you bastard." He said, "You've had it." And he said, "No, Sam." He said, "I give you my word." He said, "I didn't take it." So he said, "You must have." He said, "Come on." And he was, believe me, Andy was as honest as the day is long, believe me. And he said, "Well, Sam," he said, "I must admit, I did eat some." He said, "But I didn't." He said, "Well," he said, "you tell me who did." "Oh," he said, "no." He said, "I'm not going to tell you." He said, "That I will not do." So there I said, this is the state that we were in. I mean, I stole a crust of bread. Now, my justification was, if you like, I hijacked it because he'd stolen it before.
So, there was this incident, you said, where this torpedo panic happened.
Yeah.
But the torpedo hadn't actually hit you.
No. Well, they say the torpedo might have hit the bottom, not the warhead, and it went on and exploded.
But there was panic aboard.
A certain amount of panic there was. This time there was, but...
And when they were trying to break this door down, that was because they'd been locked down below.
Because they'd locked the door, yes.
And who was it? Was it the Italians or the Germans?
No, the Germans were sailors. And not only that, they were disciplined. I mean, what were we Italians? Well, waiters, cafe owners, and terrazzo workers, ice cream salesmen, and ice deliverers. The Germans, they had a merchant navy. They were well disciplined. They knew they were. I mean, we tried to organize ourselves as best as possible, but you couldn't compare us. We came from all different stations of life. I mean, we had two doctors, we had professors, we had two directors of the Pirelli company with us, and we had going down. I mean, you know.
But when the Germans tried to break down this door, how did you know that a shot had been, a soldier had put the rifle through the door?
Well, the thing is, I didn't see the rifle, but people did see the rifle. I mean, lots of people saw the rifle.
So the story came around the ship.
Oh, yes. And I mean, we all heard the shot. And I mean, we all heard I didn't see I was pushing up as well, trying to get out. Because, you know, we'd had an experience 10 days earlier. We weren't. I suppose we must have panicked. And there was one chap. There was some sort of a well there, and there was some ropes down there. He was shinning up the rope. Borzoni, that's right. That was his name, Borzoni. Oh, and the chap just come to me. The chap who pulled my other leg down, it was a chap called Bravo. Now he was the one that I at.
Any other incidents that you had on that voyage on the Dunera?
Well, there was one chap there, a chap called Notariani. He only had one hand. He had a false hand. And when he got to Australia, he still had £400 there, which he'd hidden in this hand. I mean, he was a rich man, but he'd carried this. Oh, it's amazing. Well, another story, which is it's a little bit sad in a way, is that when we had this dysentery, we decided that we'd have to stop all these people coming down until there was room. So Andy Peeney was put at the top of the stairs to stop any of the Jews coming down let them down, as they come out, let them down. You know, we organised ourselves a little bit there. And Andy's there, and again, although we didn't know everybody, even then we didn't know everybody, because we Londoners, we more or less we were together. The Welsh, they more or less together. The Scots, they did the same thing. So anyway, a chap came along, and Marco Godzi. And he said, you can't go down. He said, there's no room, so you have to wait. So Marco made the mistake of being a bit high-handed. And he said, if you don't let me down, he said, I'll clock you one. And he threw a punch. Andy stopped him and hit him in the guts. Of course, it turned out he didn't realise it was a fellow Italian that he'd stopped. And I don't think Marco's, to this day, he's forgiven him. It was a misunderstanding. And in fact, things were very, very, very dodgy for quite a few days, because the Welsh were going to... Now, it's stupid, isn't it? But that's the way things were. The Welsh were going to have a go at the Londoners because of...
Because of this incident.
Because of this incident. It's quite ridiculous, but it's true. That's what happened. And I mean, Marco is... probably today he's my best friend. But that's another incident.
Did you know on the journey what was going to happen to you?
We didn't have the foggiest. And we kept on saying, where are we going? We don't know. But the thing is that when we first hit land, I think it was it Takoradi? Probably. It was on the African coast. Then we thought we were going to South Africa. But we didn't have an inkling, no. We kept on asking where we're going, but classified information.
Did you go ashore at all during the voyage?
In fact, I think the only time we were allowed to see land, oh no, we saw Cape Town. Because they tried to dissuade us from coming up for air, but at Takoradi, some of us got to talk to the natives there. I didn't. Then, where was the other one? Sierra Leone, I think, was the next stop. Or Sierra Leone first, then Takoradi. Then we stopped at Cape Town. At Cape Town, a lot of the sergeant, deserted.
From the guard? Did you get new people on board in South Africa?
No, we didn't. Not to my knowledge, anyway. I don't think there was anybody else. There were certainly no Italians or Germans. I doubt there were any Jews, because of that. I don't think the South Africans treated the Jews the way they were. They were badly treated, because I mean, we Italians and Germans, all right, we were enemy aliens. But the Jews are already refugees from Germany. They had it tough.
You said that even after their luggage was thrown over, there were still masses of luggage on board.
Oh, masses. You must understand. I may be wrong. I know there were over 1,000 Jews there, and most of them. In fact, I think I don't know whether there was any other any. There weren't many Jews on the Arandora Star anyway, if there were any there. And they're all refugees who'd been allowed to leave Germany